a regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Happy Halloween to you. Hopefully, if you're, you know, handing out treats this evening, hopefully you get a good turnout. It has been, gosh, I don't know, 12, 13 years, I guess, since we've actually had anybody knock on our doors because we live out in the middle of nowhere. That's okay. We generally, when the kids were younger, would head down to Main Street in Farmville and would hand out candy. But I think tonight we're just going to stay close to home, maybe watch a spooky movie on the TV or something like that. But anyway, hopefully you have a great Halloween. We have a great show for you coming up. We're going to be talking with Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins from Breitbart News. We also have an unbelievable armed citizen story out of California to talk about, an outrageous plea deal in Oklahoma, and a really heartwarming story about a man who saved not one but two lives within a six-week period. All that coming up, but right now let's kick things off with our conversation with Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins from Breitbart News. Had the opportunity to sit down with A.W.R. yesterday, talk about the state of the 2024 presidential campaign and the importance of this election for gun owners. Take a look and a listen. A.W.R. Hawkins, thanks so much for coming on Cam and Company. It's good to see you, my friend.
Hey, good to see you, buddy. It's always good.
It is always fun. I love getting a chance to hang out on Newsmax with Carl Higbee and you almost every Tuesday, but I'm glad to have you back here on Cam and Company as well. And here we are, man, 5 days away from Election Day, and you were in the battleground state of Arizona, right?
Right.
So I'm curious, tell me what things look like to you, what it feels like to you compared to 4 years ago. Or even 8 years ago, because Arizona's been critical, and it's been, you know, pretty narrowly decided state last couple of election cycles.
Right. Well, I spend equal time. I ought to say this. I spend equal time in Arizona and Texas. And the reason I say that, it plays into my answer, Cam. If I were to back up to 2020, I saw a lot more energy in Texas than I saw in Arizona. That's why I wanted to mention that.
Okay.
This year in Arizona, I do think I've seen a couple of Harris-Walz signs, a couple, and I'm not even understating it. They're just not too many of them. Now, if you get in the right part of, say, Phoenix, or if you were to go to Tucson, yeah, you're going to. But the energy in Arizona is unbelievable, and doesn't mean I can't be wrong, Cam, but I'd be shocked if Trump doesn't pick this state up.
You know, again, I mean, you look at the polls and we know that there's a bias, right? And we know that historically that bias has underestimated Trump's support, both in 2016 and in 2020. If that holds true, I mean, I was just looking before you got started here. I think the Real Clear Politics average has Trump up by about 2 points in Arizona. Right. So if that anti-Trump polling bias still exists today, then you would be looking at a blowout in Trump's favor in Arizona. So I listen, I'm with you. I don't know how the election is going to turn out. I think we are a roughly 50-50 country. I have a feeling that Donald Trump's going to win, but you know, I don't know what's going to happen over the next 5 days. I don't know how folks have already voted, but it you know, the polling trends have looked really good for Donald right. Trump in Arizona. And so that's why what you're telling me, it there's nothing that rings false to me. Right. So what do you think it is that has made, let's assume, and by the way, if you're an Arizona voter, don't assume this. Don't just stay home on Election Day thinking that it's all in the bag. But if Trump does win Arizona, what do you think will have changed in that state? I mean, again, Joe Biden won by just a few thousand votes 4 years ago. But what are the issues that is making Arizona more Trump friendly? Is it immigration? I mean, is that the number one issue?
Well, that's one of them. Immigration is certainly one. I actually believe, Cam, number one, Trump has been consistent 2016, 2020, and now 2024. If you look at it, it's three runs at it with a very consistent message. And I think that what's happened over the last 4 years, as you see the Democrats do, we've both seen it, Cam. Look at Sandy Hook, look at whatever. they jump the shark, so to speak. They might have the ability to do a little something, so they do a lot. And they just smother the people with their liberalism, their regulation, their taxation, their gas prices, their gun grabs, on and on I could go. But here's Trump consistent. I won't take away your guns. I'll get those gas prices down. We'll cut taxes. We won't raise them. So on and so forth. So I think that that's what's happened in Arizona. That message has rung true because the border here is horrible. Anyone who drive, we used to drive, Ken. We used to leave our house, drive across the border, go to Mexico quite often. That's a no-no now. You don't do that. If you do go down there, you can watch with the naked eye the people flooding through. It's a different world than it was, say, 8 years ago, and a different environment, I should say. So you see that, Cam, to answer your point. And then also, think how many times Arizona has been the most gun-friendly state in the union. Just look it up. And so all these nonstop attacks under the Biden-Harris administration against our guns left a bad taste in people's mouth. And our gas out here, even right now, our gas is between $2.95 and $3.20 a gallon. I believe it's closer to $3.20. So, I mean, that is another tax on the working man, Cam. That's what it is. And I think all these things have turned eyes toward Trump.
You know, I suspect that you're right. Now I want to drill down and talk about guns for a second, because obviously that's what you and I both cover, right? For Bearing Arms and at Breitbart. And we've seen a lot of presidential campaigns over the years, and we've seen the Democrat messaging change, right? You know, Al Gore was all in on a gun ban, and that cost him the election in 2000. And so then I think, you know, we saw, I don't know, maybe three election cycles where Democrats don't talk about gun control, right? Gun control groups even rebranded themselves as gun safety organizations because they saw the polling. Man, you bring up gun control, people don't like that. So they reinvented themselves as a, you know, a bunch of gun safety advocates. So 4 years ago, Kamala Harris, running the Democratic primary, said she wanted to ban so-called assault weapons, said it was a good idea to have a mandatory buyback. Basically, you know, a compensated confiscation scheme. Now she says, or at least her campaign says, she doesn't support that anymore. Not a good idea any longer. She was supportive of a handgun ban in San Francisco when she was the DA. She supported Washington, D.C.'s ban on handguns when she was the district attorney in San Francisco. Co-authored an amicus brief telling the Supreme Court, don't recognize an individual right to keep and bear arms. Uphold D.C.'s gun ban. 2007, she told San Franciscans, just because you're a legal gun owner in your locked home doesn't mean we won't walk in there and just check, see how your guns are being stored. Kamala Harris has made gun control such a central part of her political career. And yet now, NWR, I mean, you know, yeah, she said she was a Glock owner, right? She says, we're not taking everybody's guns away. But am I alone? Have you noticed this over the past couple of weeks? Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have stopped talking about guns almost completely.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think I put a post on X about that a day or two ago. But I'm like, you know, it's kind of funny for all the Democrats tell us constantly that the Americans crave gun control. We crave it. We want it. Just a few congressmen stand in the way. Shame on those congressmen. But like you say, all of a sudden, when the chips are down and Trump's rising into polls and Kamala's falling and she can't risk any error, there's no talk of gun control. I noticed in that CNN town hall last week, Anderson Cooper asked her a lot of questions about a lot of things. They never brought up the topic of gun control. They don't want attention on that for the reason you're saying. If anybody Googles her or how whatever search engine you use, if you look it up or you look at my Breitbart articles or you look, Cam, at your articles at Bearing Arms in the past, you do that, you're going to see it. It's loud and clear. Supported all the bans you're talking about, including the ban on handguns. Did all of that. And very recently even reiterated her support for an assault weapons ban, although polling must have told her, don't mention the buybacks. But assault weapons ban. And the first time she and Walz campaigned together in August, I wrote at Breitbart on the very first stop. It was in Philadelphia. They pushed a ban on assault weapons together. And what listeners need to hear, that word assault weapons sometimes kind of smothers it, Cam, in my opinion, and we miss it. What that means is they want to ban AR-15s. They want to ban AK-47s. They literally want to ban the most popular rifles in America. That's what we have to hear when they say that, because that's what they want to do.
Absolutely. Just look at the bill that was introduced this year, because, you know, and again, assault weapon is a made up term, right? I always say the real definition of assault weapon is a gun that somebody wants to ban. But you look at the bill that was introduced earlier this year, the Go Safe Act by Martin Heinrich and Angus King. This basically defines an assault weapon as any gas operated semi-automatic rifle, right? That's it. I mean, that is, again, the vast majority of semi-automatic rifles. So as you say, it's the AR-15, it's the AK-47. It encompasses the most popular, the most commonly sold rifles in the country today. That would be outlawed. Now, again, I can understand why Kamala Harris doesn't want to talk about that on the campaign trail, but you hit on something really important. If this really was common sense, if this really was something that the, you know, vast majority of Americans supported, this would be part of her closing message.
Right.
This would be one of the things that she would be raising and to point out the differences between her and Donald Trump. Trump's not going to ban these guns. I will. And that's not what she's saying. She doesn't want to talk about that at all.
No,
so when you think about what a Trump presidency would mean versus what we've seen over the past 4 years, look, obviously when Trump was around the first time, you know, he was responsible for the ban on bump stocks. His first inclination was for a red flag law after Parkland, but he didn't follow up with that. I don't think Trump's been perfect on the issue. But there's a night and day difference between Donald Trump and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris when it comes to the right to keep and bear arms.
Right. Well, I think it's important. I think you're making a phenomenal point, Cam. I think first thing I want to say is when you were talking about if this were really common sense in the minds of Americans, they would talk about it. I mean, I know we have more AR-15s and AK-47s in circulation than we have F-Series Ford trucks on the road. I've covered that at Breitbart. I'm sure you've talked about it at Bearing Arms. And those owners do what I do. I keep one in a corner by my bed at night because I know I can keep my family safe. If someone starts coming down the hall, an intruder, he's going to pay a bad price. And in case there are three or four intruders, I can level the playing field by having that particular rifle. As soon as they take it away, I'm at a point of weakness now. Intruders have every benefit, every advantage. So that's why she doesn't want to mention this, because that's how most Americans think, the way I just described. Number two, on Trump, like you're talking about, Trump's not perfect. And guess what? My previous favorite president, Ronald Reagan, was not perfect. We have certain gun controls, you know, particularly on fully automatic firearms that I don't agree with. Why are they in place? Ronald Reagan. But guess what? Doesn't in any way take him away from, in my mind, being the greatest president of the 20th century. Doesn't take that away. There were blemishes, but the shine overwhelmed that. Same thing with Trump. And I believe Trump in this second term will understand, I can't let my gut reaction be that kind of gut reaction. Even if I don't follow through, I got to keep that in check. And I have zero fear of Trump doing something that would do anything other than strengthen our Second Amendment. I always remind people, if it wasn't for Trump, we wouldn't have this 6-3 majority in the Supreme Court. Now, sometimes that wavers because Roberts, every now and then, you can't tell. But
right. Even
that leaves us a 5-4. That's because of Trump. And so there were those little blemishes you talked about, Cam, and no one can, you're lying to say they weren't there, whoever says it. But at the same time, the great things he did far outshine that.
Yeah. And I mean, again, you talk about the judges, you know, that alone, I think, is such a crucial difference. And it's not just the three Supreme Court justices. I mean, there was a time when we had parity on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals for the first time in decades. Right. You actually had a block of Republican appointed judges that matched the number of Democrat appointed judges. And we started to see, you know, there is a streak, AWR, of more than 50 Second Amendment cases where the Ninth Circuit said, yep, that gun control law is fine. Yep, that one's fine, too. 50 times in a row, they never found fault with any of these gun control laws. But then under Trump, we started seeing judges like Lawrence Van Dyke on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and others say, hey, time out. Let's actually look at what the Supreme Court said here in Heller. And over the past couple of years, let's look at what they said in Bruin. Right.
Right.
And you've started to actually get better decisions out of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, not because of Joe Biden, but because of the judicial appointments that Donald Trump has been able to make. Now, again, Biden's been busy over the last 4 years, so the Ninth Circuit is not quite at parity anymore. But, you know, it's not just about those nine justices on the Supreme Court. It's about the hundreds of judges around the country and the philosophy that will guide them. Now, again, that doesn't mean that every Trump appointed judge is going to, you know, rule in favor of gun owners. We've seen some terrible decisions, quite frankly, from a couple of Trump appointed judges. But I can't point to any really great decisions from Biden appointed judges when it comes to our right to keep and bear arms. And I can point to several when it comes to those judges that are appointed by Donald Trump, because, again, I think he's looking for those judges who do have an originalist point of view, who don't think that the meaning of the Constitution changes just because we want it to mean something different. Right.
Right.
I agree with you. And that's a huge difference. It really is.
It is. And I'll tell you, I think, and I have a little inside scoop on this. I want to not say anything, again, critical, but I think Trump came in that first time, Cam, and he had to figure it out, because he came in. He was basically an enemy under fire by the swamp, and he had to figure it out. And yet he accomplished these things. And I believe in the second term, he hits the ground running. He knows how it works now. And I think if we think, wow, what he did judicially was phenomenal in that first term, Cam, let's see what he can do in this second one. Who knows what kind of judicial landscape he might leave us, both at the Supreme Court and, as you're saying, at the circuit court levels. Wouldn't it be nice if he could lock those courts up with pro-constitutional jurists, say, for the next 10 years? Wouldn't it be nice if he could put in some who are young enough, they're going to be there perhaps for 20, 30 more years, and he could save the republic? And I mean that with my whole heart. That is not hyperbole. Trump could save the republic with those kind of appointments.
Well, again, less than a week, and hopefully we'll know who the victor is here. I think that the trends are going Trump's way. I think Kamala Harris is getting a little scared, getting a little desperate, but we'll see how it all shakes out here in less than a week. And then, of course, we do have, you know, other news to talk about. I'd love to have you on after the election, because we've got Snoke versus Brown coming up at the Supreme Court. We'll see if the court takes a challenge to one of those so-called assault bans, magazine ban, pending in conference as well here in a couple of weeks. So it's going to be a very, very busy time for gun owners, even after the dust from Election Day settles.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's always great to be on with you. So anytime, any place, you just holler and I'll be here.
All right, man. It's good to see you again. And I look forward to doing this again very soon. Thanks, AWR.
Thank you, Cam.
And thanks to AWR for joining us on the program, and hopefully get a chance to talk with them again here soon. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. You know, so yesterday we had that story about the woman in Texas who was originally sentenced to 4 years probation for sexually abusing a 13-year-old boy, right? And the terms of his probation were changed to include, I think, a whopping 15 days in jail because of something that happened that allowed prosecutors to go back and say, okay, we're gonna change things up a little bit. I that was bad enough. This is even worse. From Oklahoma, Tulsa County DA frustrated with sentence in child sexual abuse case. Tulsa County District Attorney Steve Kunzweiler said he has no words to describe his frustration after a judge sentenced a man to 40 years probation after conviction of two counts of child sexual abuse. 40 years probation. That's insane. Now, this case went to trial, and a jury actually recommended that the defendant, Sean Kennedy, go to jail for 20 years on each count of child sexual abuse. Then the judge just rejected that, said, nah, let's do probation instead. The DA said law enforcement spends hours encouraging young victims to believe in the system, that their courage is going to be rewarded. He said DHS caseworkers, forensic interviewers, prosecutors, victims' advocates all stand with these victims because we understand the hurt that they experienced and the courage that it takes to testify in front of complete strangers. He said it'd be easy to recommend probation for child sexual offenders because they would always take it. And he said, that's why we don't do it. And he said, of all of the criminal perpetrators I've dealt with in my 35-year career, the rapists and the molesters of children are the most dangerous for our community. Adding, when this jury recommended a sentence of 40 years in prison, no one envisioned this man will be walking our streets as a free man. 12 people found him guilty. He never took accountability for his repulsive conduct. He said, we send people to prison for stealing merchandise. And he should have gone to prison for stealing innocence. That, again, I am just gobsmacked at that. It was Tulsa County Judge Sharon Holmes, by the way, who went against the jury's recommendation and gave Kennedy 40 years probation for, again, 2 counts of child sexual abuse. So the jury did what they could. Sounds like prosecutors did what they could. The victims showed that courage and testified in open court. And again, they were told, trust the justice system. Justice will be done. I don't think it was. I mean, 40 years probation, when the jury recommended 40 years in prison. The judge didn't even split that sentence. The judge didn't even say, listen, I'm going to sentence you to 20 years probation, but you're going to do 20 years behind bars first. It's just sickening. I don't think the judge has said anything publicly about why she handed down that sentence, but, man, I hope she does, because this is just inexplicable and outrageous. Now, on to today's Armed Citizen story, which is tragic in its own right. The headline, mother and son stabbed to death during home invasion. Younger son shoots suspect in California. The two lives that were lost, they sound like just such wonderful people. The mom, the matriarch of the family, the son, a father of three, two of whom lost their mom 5 years ago. They're now orphaned. And the man accused of this crime, apparently known to police, but we don't know much about his previous criminal history. 30-year-old Fabian Gomez is the suspect's name. A surveillance video from last Thursday shows somebody who looks a lot like Gomez trying to break into a home in Tulare, California. And apparently he saw that camera, and then he moved on to another home. According to ABC 11 in Fresno, that's where Gomez tried to enter through the backyard of that home, and he was confronted by the homeowner, 58-year-old Melissa Quinn. Gomez then attacked Quinn with a knife, began stabbing her. Her 38-year-old son, Raymond Garza, whose siblings say was inseparable from his mom, tried to intervene. And Gomez stabbed him as well. Michael Garza, who is Melissa Quinn's second son and Raymond Garza's youngest brother, said losing them, not just one, but both at the same time, is a huge hit to the family. They were our protectors. And if anything happened, they were the first to defend their family members. Michael Garza said the youngest sibling heard what was going on, grabbed his gun, came out and shot the intruder, and was able to keep Gomez from fleeing until police arrived. He was also able to stop this attack from proceeding any further. ABC 11 in Fresno reports that there were 6 other people in the home, including Melissa Quinn's elderly father, who's apparently not in the best of health. She was his primary caregiver. And then Raymond Garza's 2 kids, or 3 kids, ages 7, 9, and 19, were also in the home. You had 2 other adults. And clearly you had somebody who had no compulsion about taking a human life, because he killed 2 people right there. So I know it's just human nature for the armed citizen who stopped this threat to think, could I have done more? Should I have been faster? What could I have done? Again, I know that those thoughts are going through his head. But I hope that he also knows that he did everything he could. And he did save lives. He displayed just as much heroism and courage as his mom and his brother did. And I know that they would be proud of him for protecting the family just as they did. Again, we don't know what type of criminal history Gomez has. He's pled not guilty, by the way. Pled not guilty on Tuesday to two counts of first-degree murder and one count of residential burglary with second circumstances, special circumstances. But KFSN in Fresno said that Gomez has a, quote, history of run-ins with police, which again begs the question, was Gomez the recipient of a sweetheart plea deal at some point in the past? Should he have been behind bars instead of allegedly wandering the backyards in the streets of Tulare, California, last Thursday, when Ms. Quinn and her son, Mr. Garza, were brutally murdered? We will keep our eyes open for any more updates on this case. And by the way, I wrote about this at Bearing Arms today. I included a link to the family's GoFundMe that they have set up to help pay for the funeral expenses for Melissa Quinn and her son. They're asking for about $10,000. When I checked last, they had raised about $7,000. I hope and I pray that they will get that money. If you can kick in a couple of bucks, that would be fantastic. Again, I mean, this family just has been ripped up at the matriarch, taken from them. You've got two kids who are now growing up without either parent. It's just absolutely awful. And I know it could have been so much worse if it weren't for that armed citizen being there. But again, it is still just a tragic situation. Now, today's good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A North Texas man who saved two lives in 6 weeks. And yes, the headline, I was a little bothered by this headline. North Texas hero saved two lives after spending 20 years in prison. Like, you've done your time. You've gotten out. Why does that have to be included in the initial description of what you've done saving lives, right? That kind of bothered me. But I think for this individual, his time behind bars is a big part of his personal story. Jacob Bell is the Ellis County, Texas man who has just been on a life-saving tear over the past couple of months. In August, NBC in Dallas reports that Bell saved a drowning swimmer at Lake Waxahachie. And then earlier this month, he pulled a man from a burning car after a crash. They say long before any of this, Bell was sentenced to 35 years in prison for burglary, by the way, which is an incredible sentence. He said he made the decision to change his life, and because of that, he was able to save two others. In the most recent incident, Bell said he was driving a truck in Comanche County, Texas, when he came across a crash scene. He said there was a car on fire. It was upside down next to another telephone pole. Bell told NBC5 that his instincts just took over. He said, for me, I didn't even think about it. I knew I could physically get him out of there, and I was going to do it. So he smashed in the car window, was able to pull out the 72-year-old driver, who at that point wasn't breathing. He said, I felt for a pulse. I pulled him out. I kind of got him on the ground, and I felt for a pulse. I couldn't feel anything. I started CPR on him, and maybe after 5 or 10 seconds, I could feel a faint pulse. The man was able to start breathing on his own at the scene. Bell, suffering from smoke inhalation, was taken with the driver to a hospital in Fort Worth. NBC5 spoke to that 72-year-old driver, said he was still feeling the effects of the broken ribs, but he says he's going to recover. He said it's been pretty amazing. And again, 6 weeks before that, he was on a boat at Lake Waxahachie, and he saw a teenage girl struggling in the water there, so he jumped in, grabbed her, saved her, pulled her back to shore. He also recovered the body of 21-year-old Linser Lopez, who at that point had succumbed and had drowned. He said, I'm still dealing with a lot of that. He said the fact that Linser lost his life that day is still heartbreaking. And he spoke to NBC5 about his time behind bars. He said, I got charged with a burglary in 96, and they gave me 35 and a half years. He served 20 years of that 35-year sentence for burglary. Could still be behind bars today. And He told NBC5 that he had committed to changing his life when he left prison 6 years ago. He has a wife and child. And he said, you know, I spent most of my life thinking that I was just a nobody and a castaway. I was never going to get my self-worth back. And he said, this has really shown me that it's possible to give back and to feel good about yourself. And that means something. You know, I don't think that we necessarily should be defined by our mistakes and by the lowest points in our life. Mr. Bell served 20 years for burglary. We've covered stories here where people get probation, time served. They're out 6 months on a charge of burglary. He could have come out of prison a very bitter man, very angry man, feeling that that sentence was unjust. Could have been angry at the world, could have been angry at everybody around him. Sounds like that was not the case. If anybody was angry at anybody, maybe it was himself. But I'm glad that Mr. Bell knows that he is not defined by the mistakes of the past, and that every day is an opportunity to do the right thing, to be the kind of man he wants to be. And I'm grateful that, again, in those occasions where Jacob Bell has been able to step up and save lives, he has risen to the occasion. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again next Monday. We're going to be talking with Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League. There's a lot of stuff going on in terms of the legal challenges to Chapter 135. We'll also be giving you a one final pre-election day look at some of the key races for gun owners and Second Amendment advocates. So be sure to tune in for that. Hope you have a great weekend. Also be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout Friday and the weekend, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, whether it's lawsuits, whether it's new bills that are dropping in state houses, the culture war attacks on our right to keep and bear arms. We're covering it all for you. And I really do appreciate your support. All right, we'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.